Comments from the Book of Numbers, Chapter 11, Verse 4. Diet modified, disposition activated mind. The state of the mind has largely to do with the health of the body, and especially with the health of the digestive organs. As a general thing, the Lord did not provide His people with flesh meat in the desert because He knew that the use of this diet would create disease and insubordination. In order to modify the disposition and bring the higher powers of the mind into active service, He removed from them the flesh of dead animals. He gave them angels' food, manna from heaven. Manuscript 38, 1898. Chapter 12, verse 1. Moses' wife, not black. The wife of Moses was not black, but her complexion was somewhat darker than the Hebrews. Spirit of Prophecy, Volume 1, page 286. Verse 3. Moses superior to all rulers. Moses stands forth superior in wisdom and integrity to all the sovereigns and statesmen of earth. Yet this man claims no credit for himself, but points the people of God as the source of all power and wisdom. Where is there such a character among men of this age? Those who would speak contemptuously of the law of God are dishonoring Him and casting a shadow over the most illustrious character presented in the annals of men. Signs of the Times, October 21, 1886. Moses could judge instantly. Moses was a humble man. God called him the meekest man on earth. He was generous, well-balanced. He was not defective, and his qualities were not merely half-developed. He could successfully exhort his fellow men because his life itself was a living representation of what man can become and accomplish with God as his helper, of what he taught to others, of what he desired them to be, and of what God required of him. He spoke from the heart, and it reached the heart. He was accomplished in knowledge, yet simple as a child in the manifestation of his deep sympathies. Endowed with a remarkable instinct, he could judge instantly of the needs of all who surrounded him and of the things which were in bad condition and required attention, and he did not neglect them. Manuscript 24, 1887. The meekest of men. Moses was the greatest man who ever stood as leader of the people of God. He was greatly honored by God, not for the experience which he had gained in the Egyptian court, but because he was the meekest of men. God talked with him face to face as a man talks with a friend. If men desire to be honored by God, let them be humble. Those who carry forward God's work should be distinguished from all others by their humility. Of the man who is noted for his meekness, Christ says, "He can be trusted. Through him I can reveal myself to the world. He will not weave into the web any threads of selfishness. I will manifest myself to him as I do not to the world." Manuscript 165, 1899. Chapter 13, verse 30. Courage through faith. It was Caleb's faith that gave him courage, that kept him from the fear of man and enabled him to stand boldly and unflinchingly in defense of the right. Through reliance on the same power, the mighty general of the armies of heaven, every true soldier of the cross may receive strength and courage to overcome the obstacles that seem insurmountable. Review and Herald, May 30, 1912. Caleb's needed today. Caleb's have been greatly needed in different periods of the history of our work. Today we need men of thorough fidelity, men who follow the Lord fully, men who are not disposed to be silent when they ought to speak, who are as true as steel to principle, who do not seek to make a pretentious show, but who walk humbly with God. Patient, kind, obliging, courteous men who understand that the science of prayer is to exercise faith and show works that will tell to the glory of God and the good of His people. To follow Jesus requires wholehearted conversion at the start and a repetition of this conversion every day. Letter 39, 1899. Chapter 14, verses 29 to 30. Wanderings extended through Satan's efforts. God gave positive evidence that He rules in the heavens, and rebellion was punished with death. Only two of those who as adults left Egypt saw the promised land. The wanderings of the people were extended until the rest were buried in the wilderness. Today, Satan is using the same devising to introduce the same evils, and his efforts are followed by the same results that in the days of Israel laid so many in their graves. Manuscript 13, 1906, chapter 15, verses 38 and 39. Israel's dress distinguished them from nations. The children of Israel, after they were brought out of Egypt, were commanded to have a simple ribbon of blue in the border of their garments to distinguish them from the nations around them and to signify that they were God's peculiar people. The people of God are not now required to have a special mark placed upon their garments, but in the New Testament, we are often referred to ancient Israel for examples. If God gave such definite directions to his ancient people in regard to their dress, will not the dress of his people in this age come under his notice? Should there not be in their dress a distinction from that of the world? Should not the people of God, who are his peculiar treasure, seek even in their dress to glorify God? And should they not, by examples in point of dress and by their simple style, rebuke the pride, vanity, and extravagance of worldly, pleasure-loving professors? God requires this of his people. Pride is rebuked in his word. H.R., February 1872, chapter 16, verses 1 to 50. Rebellion against leadership. These men of Israel complained and influenced the people to stand with them in rebellion, and even after God stretched forth his hand and swallowed up the wrongdoers and the people fled to their tents in horror, their rebellion was not cured. The depth of their disaffection was made manifest even under the judgment of the Lord. The morning after the destruction of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram and their confederates, the people came to Moses and Aaron, saying, "Ye have killed the people of the Lord." For this false charge on the servants of God, thousands more were killed, for there was in their sin exultation and presumptuous wickedness. Letter 12A, 1893. Lessons from the Rebellion. I question whether genuine rebellion is ever curable. Study in Patriarchs and Prophets the rebellion of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. This rebellion was extended, including more than two men. It was led by 250 princes of the congregation, men of renown. Call rebellion by its right name and apostasy by its right name, and then consider that the experience of the ancient people of God, with all its objectionable features, was faithfully chronicled to pass into history. The Scripture declares, "These things were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come." And if men and women who have the knowledge of the truth are so far separated from their great leader that they will take the great leader of apostasy and name him Christ our righteousness, it is because they have not sunk the shaft deep into the mines of truth. They are not able to distinguish the precious ore from the base material. The Lord has permitted this matter to develop as it has done in order to show how easily his people would be misled when they depend upon the words of men instead of searching the Scriptures for themselves, as did the noble Bereans, to see if these things are so. Rebellion and apostasy are in the very air we breathe. We shall be affected by it unless we, by faith, hang our helpless souls upon Christ. If men are so easily misled, how will they stand when Satan shall personate Christ and work miracles? Who will be unmoved by his misrepresentations, professing to be Christ when it is only Satan assuming the person of Christ and apparently working the works of Christ? What will hold God's people from giving their allegiance to false Christ? Go not ye after them. The doctrines must be plainly understood. The men accepted to teach the truth must be anchored. Then their vessel will hold against storm and tempest because the anchor holds them firmly. The deceptions will increase, and we are to call rebellion by its right name. We are to stand with the whole armor on. My brethren, you are not meeting men only, but principalities and powers. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. Let Ephesians 6, 10-18 be read carefully. Letter 1, 1897. Christ came to our world not to aid Satan in working up rebellion, but to put down rebellion. Wherever men start out in rebellion, they will work secretly and in darkness, as they will not come as Christ has told them to do, to the ones who they have any matter against, but will take their budget of falsehoods and enmity and evil surmisings and satanic representations, as did Satan to the fellow angels under him, and gain their sympathy by false representations. Letter 156, 1897, verses 1 to 3, princes enlisted in rebellion. These men of Israel were determined to resist all evidence that would prove them to be wrong, and they went on and on in their course of disaffection until many were drawn away to unite with them. Who were these? Not the weak, not the ignorant, not the unenlightened. In that rebellion there were 250 princes famous in the congregation, men of renown. Letter 2A, 1892. Verse 3. Moses accused of hindering progress. They accused Moses of being the cause of their not entering the promised land. They said that God had not dealt with them thus. He had not said that they should die in the wilderness. They would never believe what he had said, that he had thus said, but that it was Moses who had said this, not the Lord, and that it was all arranged by Moses to never bring them to the land of Canaan. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, page 30. Korah deceived himself. Korah had cherished his envy and rebellion until he was self-deceived, and he really thought that the congregation was a very righteous people and that Moses was a tyrannical ruler, continually dwelling upon the necessity of the congregation's being holy when there was no need of it, for they were holy. Verse 19. The people deceived themselves. The people thought if Korah could lead them and encourage them and dwell upon their righteous acts, instead of reminding them of their failures, they should have a very peaceful, prosperous journey, and he would without doubt lead them not back and forward in the wilderness, but into the promised land. They said it was Moses who had told them that they could not go into the land, and that the Lord had not thus said. Korah, in his exalted self-confidence, gathered all the congregation against Moses and Aaron unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, page 30. Chapter 17, verses 1 to 13. Rod preserved as a reminder. All the remarkable changes in the rod occurred in one night to convince them that God had positively distinguished between Aaron and the rest of the children of Israel. After this miracle of divine power, the authority of the priesthood was no longer called in question. This wonderful rod was preserved to be frequently shown to the people to remind them of the past, to prevent them from murmuring and again calling in question to whom the priesthood rightfully belonged. After the children of Israel were fully convinced of their wrong in unjustly accusing Moses and Aaron, as they had done, they saw their past rebellion in its true light, and they were terrified. They spake unto Moses, saying, "Behold, we die, we perish, we all perish." Then they are at length compelled to believe the unwelcome truth that their faith is to die in the wilderness. After they believed that it was indeed the Lord who had said they should not enter the promised land but should die, they then acknowledged that Moses and Aaron were right and that they had sinned against the Lord in rebelling against their authority. They also confessed that Korah and those who perished with him were sinners against the Lord and that they had justly suffered his wrath. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, pages 35 and 36. Chapter 20, verses 7, 8, 10, and 12. Sin of Moses misrepresented God's leadership. In all their wanderings, the children of Israel were tempted to attribute to Moses the special work of God, the mighty miracles that had been wrought to deliver them from Egyptian bondage. They charged Moses with bringing them out of the land of Egypt. It was true that God had manifested himself wonderfully to Moses. He had specially favored him with his presence. To him God had revealed his exceeding glory. Upon the mount he had taken him into a sacred nearness to himself and had talked with him as a man speaks to a friend. But the Lord had given evidence after evidence that it was himself who was working for their deliverance. By saying, "Must we fetch you water out of this rock?" Moses virtually said to the people that they were correct in believing that he himself was doing the mighty works that had been done in their behalf. This made it necessary for God to prove to Israel that his admission was not founded on fact. to dispel forever from the minds of the Israelites the idea that a man was leading them, God found it necessary to allow their leader to die before they entered the land of Canaan. Manuscript 69, 1912. Chapter 21, verse 6, had been miraculously preserved. To punish them from their ingratitude and complaining against God, the Lord permitted fiery serpents to bite them. They were called fiery because their bite produced painful inflammation and speedy death. The Israelites up to this time had been preserved from these serpents in the wilderness by a continual miracle, for the wilderness through which they traveled was infested with poisonous serpents. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, page 41. A fatal decision. There were those who stopped to reason regarding the foolishness of looking for relief to this means. That they should be healed by looking at a piece of brass was absurd to their minds, and they said, "We will not look." This decision was fatal, and all who would not accept the provision made perished. The brazen serpent was uplifted in the wilderness that those who looked in faith might be made whole. In like manner, God sends a restoring, healing message to men, calling upon them to look away from man and earthly things and place their trust in God. He has given His people the truth with power through the Holy Spirit. He opened His word to those who were searching and praying for truth. But when these messengers gave the truth they had received to the people, they were as unbelieving as the Israelites. Many were caviling over the truth brought to them by humble messengers. Manuscript 75, 1899. Chapter 22, 1-6. Balaam, double-minded. At the time Balak sent messengers for him, Balaam, he was double-minded, pursuing a course to gain and retain the favor and honor of the enemies of the Lord, for the sake of rewards he received from them. At the same time, he was professing to be a prophet of God. Idolatrous nations believed that curses might be uttered which would affect individuals and even whole nations. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, page 43, verses 15-17. Balaam's one sin, covetousness. Here is a solemn warning for the people of God today to allow no unchristian trait to live in their hearts. A sin which is fostered becomes habitual, and strengthened by repetition, it soon exerts a controlling influence, bringing into subjection all the nobler powers. Balaam loved the reward of unrighteousness. The sin of covetousness, which God ranks with idolatry, he did not resist and overcome. Satan obtained entire control of him through this one fault, which deteriorated his character and made him a time server. He called God his master, but he did not serve him. He did not work the works of God. Signs of the Times, November 18, 1880. Chapter 24, verses 1-5. Beheld glory of God's presence. Balaam had wished to appear to be favorable to Balak, and had permitted him to be deceived and think that he used superstitious ceremonies and enchantments when he besought the Lord. But as he followed out the command given him of God, he grew bolder in proportion as he obeyed the divine impulse, and he laid aside his pretended conjuration and looked toward the encampment of the Israelites. He beheld them all encamped in perfect order under their respective standards at a distance from the tabernacle. Balaam was permitted to behold the glorious manifestation of God's presence overshadowing, protecting, and guiding the tabernacle. He was filled with admiration at the sublime scene. He opened his parable with all the dignity of a true prophet of God. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, pages 47 and 48. Verses 15-24. Balak amazed by revelation. The Moabites understood the import of the prophetic words of Balaam, that the Israelites, after conquering the Canaanites, should settle in their land, and all attempts to subdue them would be of no more avail than for a feeble beast to arouse the lion out of his den. Balaam told Balak that he would inform him what the Israelites would do to his people at a later period. The Lord unfolded the future before Balaam and permitted events which would occur to pass before his sight, that the Moabites should understand that Israel should finally triumph. As Balaam prophetically rehearsed the future to Balak and his princes, he was struck with amazement at the future display of God's power. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, page 48. Chapter 25, 16 to 18, God's Control Unlimited. Moses commanded the men of war to destroy the women and male children. Balaam had sold the children of Israel for a reward, and he perished with the people whose favor he had obtained at the sacrifice of 24,000 of the Israelites. The Lord is regarded as cruel by many in requiring his people to make war with other nations. They say that it is contrary to his benevolent character. But he who made the world and formed man to dwell upon the earth has unlimited control over the works of his hands, and it is his right to do as he pleases and what he pleases with the work of his hands. Man has no right to say to his Maker, "Why doest thou thus?" There is no injustice in his character. He is the ruler of the world, and a large portion of his subjects have rebelled against his authority and have trampled upon his law. He has used his people as instruments of his wrath to punish wicked nations who have vexed them and seduced them into idolatry. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, pages 50 and 51.